This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah.
It's episode 436 if you just joined us. Let's get into it. Let's talk about USC football. We start, Alicia, with the coaches poll, which came out today, Monday, August 8th. And USC ranks number 15. Number one, of course, is Alabama with 56 first-place votes, followed by Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, and Notre Dame at number five. The Irish are the top team on USC's schedule to be ranked. Utah is eighth. Oregon, who's not on USC's schedule this year, but certainly a team that SC could face in a possible Pac-12 championship game, is 12th. Others receiving votes, you have Fresno State had 21 votes. UCLA had 10. Oregon State had 2. There was a random rogue first place vote for Texas at number 18. But quite the interesting poll with SC at number 15. Lincoln Riley's former school, Oklahoma, slots in at number 9. Your thoughts?
Okay, polls are polls. Like, they're whatever every year, but like, who, I need to know who cast the Texas vote. Like, was it Jimbo at Texas A&M just like being a troll? Like, who was it? I need to know.
That would be a good move, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
What was it? Sark himself pulling a Kiffin? Like, was it? I don't know. It could have just been a million different options, and I want to know the story behind it because it's so insane. Like, even if you think Texas is going to be good this year, that's an insane first place vote.
Oh. What were they, like 4-8 last year?
Yes. Like, yes.
5-7, whatever it was under Sark's first year. Yeah, I think Sark will pan out well at Texas. Maybe I'm crazy. Crazy because like our friend Kenny from Traveler Hayes Thursdays has been saying, like, you look at Texas and the crazy thing is all of their hires the last, you know, decade plus since Mack Brown left have been good. They went and hired Charlie Strong, and Charlie Strong was absolutely the guy you should have wanted at the time. He, you know, takes Louisville to the Sugar Bowl and the whole bit, and he falls flat on his face.
USC fans would have given up a lot of stuff to get Tom Herman when they hired Tom Herman.
Tom Herman was much ballyhooed. Everyone thought that he was going to go to, you know, LSU or go to, you know, insert school here. He could have gone anywhere. Everyone wanted him at the time. He goes to Texas and falls flat on his face. And here comes Sark, who, if it wasn't for the year and a half at SC, which was marred by his off the field incidents. If it wasn't for that, everyone would say that it was, you know, a strong hire given his resume, a national championship winning assistant coach, someone with, NFL assistant experience, some guy who's bounced around. Surely the Washington tenure was up and down, but trending in the right direction towards the end. And yet, they were terrible last year, and here they are with the first place vote. But this isn't a Texas podcast. SC's at 15. I want to know your thoughts about SC at 15, because for me, that feels about right. Like, I always struggle with these preseason polls because there's two ways to look at it. You look at the number and you go, is that about right with what I think that they are? And then you have to think about what a poll actually is. It's ranking teams in, you know, it's sort of three-dimensional, right? Like, where do you rank against everybody else? It's not about just, does USC going into this season seem like they could be the 15th best team in the country? Yeah, I think that's possible. I think that's fair. are there actually 14 teams that are better than them? Are there actually, you know, 115 that are worse than them? I don't know the specifics because I haven't looked at every single team in America, right? But like the number 15 on the surface sounds pretty okay.
Well, it's perfect to me. I love USC starting 15th. That means they have plenty of room to rise and to earn going into the top 10 instead of starting in the top 10 and having a lot of expectations. Poncho Cam in the chat said USC should be in the top 10. I don't think that's necessarily wrong because I think that, like, if I'm Baylor, I'm kind of pissed off that I'm behind Oklahoma. Like, Baylor has earned a better ranking than Oklahoma given the offseason that Oklahoma has had. If I'm, you know, Michigan State, I'm wondering why I'm not higher up. Right. If I'm Oklahoma State, I'm wondering why I'm not top 10. USC, I think you could absolutely make the argument that they will probably be a top 10 team this season. But I got no issue with the coaches not putting USC in there. A, it doesn't matter. And B, you know, I'd rather see USC as slightly under the radar wherever possible than going into the season, you know, ranked number 7 or something and then just only having room to fall. So
right.
I think it's fair considering the turnover, considering everything I've talked about this summer, the turnover of the roster, the defensive questions, all of that kind of stuff, like, and Josh Arena just said USC is always overranked. Like, that's absolutely true. USC is overranked.
Yeah.
If they're going to be underranked this year, then I'm actually kind of here for it. Like, well, this is the year I'll take it.
Given all the turnover, I think the reality is we don't know how good this USC team is, right?
Like, it is funny, though, that, like, many a Clay Helton team was ranked sort of 14 to 13. And, like, I think everyone will say this USC team certainly has more potential to do something interesting. Yes. But
they have more potential, I think, but in terms of immediate week one confidence, I don't know. And that's obviously not a knock on the current regime. It's more so just, you just don't know. There's so many mixed parts. I think SC is going to be pretty good. I don't know exactly how good SC is going to be. And I think 15 sort of makes sense there. Even if they probably maybe could be 20th, they get the 5 place grid bump. Because it's SC, like, penalty. You know, it sort of makes sense.
Here's what I know. If USC beats Stanford, they'll be top 10 by then, I think. So
sure.
Get through the game that I'm calling the trap game, and then
you're calling the trap game.
Everyone's calling that trap game.
I said from the beginning, as soon as Lincoln Riley was hired, I said, that's the one to circle.
Yeah. So if USC gets through that one, then yeah, USC trust me, USC blows out Rice like 60 to nothing and they're going to move up 5 spots just on that string.
The crazy thing for me is, like, I think the Stanford game is absolutely going to be a metal tester for SC because for all the reasons I've said in the past, I think that if you're David Shaw, you want to do all you can to put all your eggs in the, especially if you're Stanford, who maybe doesn't have a bunch of high hopes this season, based on the last couple of years not really panning out for the Cardinal. You want to put all your eggs in the basket of delivering an early punch to shut up SC and all the hype. And that's what Stanford's been so good at in general, but especially this year. So it would sort of make sense. That said, I don't know that if SC beats Stanford that it's going to actually be impressive with the pollsters, considering that Stanford is a team that, you know, what were they last year? 3-9, 4-8, like in that ballpark? Like,
I guess I'm thinking
not
of
exactly
it.
Impressive. We think of Stanford as being impressive because we want them to be the Stanford of yesteryear because that rivalry was so fun. And, you know, we being sort of conference power because they were for 10 years. But it's been, like, you know,
the way
it's been a few years now.
The way I see it, though, is that if USC beats Stanford, I don't know, the only month of the season changes in terms of trajectory for me if USC beats Stanford. So, like, if USC beats Stanford, they get Fresno State, who will be, I mean, there's a decent chance Fresno State could be ranked by the time that game comes around.
Sure.
get them at home. And then you got to go to Corvallis to an Oregon State team that is getting votes in the coaches poll. So for whatever reason, and then I think you get Arizona State, which personally, I think they're going to be a dumpster fire. I'm probably jinxing it. But if you make it through Stanford, like the chances of you being 5-0 at the end of that first game, that first five game stretch, like I feel like that's way more probable. Whereas like if USC loses to Stanford, you could still win the rest of those games, but you change the dynamics of the season. Does that make sense? Like,
okay. Here's the thing. I think that you look at SC's schedule, Oregon State on the road in Corvallis absolutely should be the terrifying game, right?
Yeah.
Given how well Oregon State has looked under Jonathan Smith, that should be the game that should have you shaken in the boots. Absolutely. I think that's a better game than Stanford. If it wasn't for the idea that SC just ends the legs early on to Stanford because David Shaw, for some reason, is really good in that game. Like, and they pull out these performances where they, you know, play up and compared to what they do in the rest of the season. So how much of that was about Clay Helton? How much of that was about David Shaw? I think we're going to learn a lot this upcoming year, you know, next month when SC plays Stanford up on the farm. The other thing to note, Notre Dame at 5, Utah at number 8. So there are opportunities for SC potentially to have impressive wins if the season goes well for SC, and SC needs those opportunities. They're there in Notre Dame and Utah. Your thoughts on the Irish and the Utes?
I think that ranking for Utah is giving them good respect, and I'm glad that they're getting that kind of respect in this poll. The Notre Dame one is really interesting because like Notre Dame's almost like in the reverse USC at this point. People are putting a lot of stock in Freeman, and I think he could be good, but they're putting a lot of stock in him hitting the ground running and sort of having everything work out for him in his first year as a head coach. And so that sort of top five ranking, it could bite Notre Dame in the butt if they have some growing pains with the new coaching staff.
I think if you're Notre Dame, that move was about continuity.
Yeah.
And yes, I think there's long-term hope that they have in Freeman. I think that, you know, rightly so. I think he's someone who has been, you know, highly praised for good reason. At the same time, that move was about stability after Brian Kelly leaves. So if anything, I think it's a completely different situation than what Lincoln Riley is doing, which he had to tear down SC and rebuild.
More so what I'm saying is like, if I'm Martin Freeman, like I almost want to be underestimated more than that question that number five is giving me, because I know continuity is a thing, but also he hasn't been on the staff that long, and Brian Kelly is decades of extreme success in the college game, and Freeman is a rookie here. He's a straight up rookie. So,
but by the way, did you say Martin Freeman?
I did say Martin Freeman, and immediately I'm like, it's not Martin Freeman.
I'm like, is that a season one Fargo reference?
I feel like.
Or was he in Love Actually, right?
Yeah, Martin Freeman's in Love Actually too. Yeah, yeah.
Where does he rank on your favorite in Love? I think he's got to be up there.
High up there. I love that storyline. I love him in that role. He's just like, they're both beautifully awkward in that. I love awkward people. So
yeah,
100%.
Love it. Let's turn the page and talk about USC and recruiting. SC gets a big commitment from 4-star edge rusher Braylon Shelby out of Friendswood, Texas. Is that a cool name or what? Friendswood, Texas. Yeah. 133rd in the 24/7 Sports National Composite, the 15th ranked edge rusher and the 23rd ranked recruit in the state of Texas. 77 tackles last year, 8 sacks. He was the unanimous Texas District 9-5A D1 first team. It's like I'm reading a license plate or something. First team selection, an outside linebacker as a junior. And the Trojans, of course, beat out the Texas Longhorns, the same Texas Longhorns of one first place coaches poll vote.
Yes, indeed. And that's why I think this is a big deal. There's been a lot of talk about how USC needs to recruit the trenches better. And this is definitely a move in that direction. Pulling a, you know, top 150 edge rusher out of Texas when you're going against Texas in the recruitment, I think that's a really, really good sign for Roy Manning and the guys recruiting for the defensive line. So really, this is exactly the kind of player that USC needs to bring in, that they need to hold on to, and then they need to move forward with being able to prove they can grab these guys from out of state, from in-state, from everywhere. So
technically, big get. Texas recruits should be considered in-state for SC, given
the Texas connections.
The history of SC in Texas, not only the last couple of years, but even with Lincoln Riley. I mean, he is super familiar with Texas. Norman is only a couple hours away from the state anyway. So, it all sort of checks out. And speaking of that area, SC makes another haul of sorts from the state of Texas in the Big 12. USC hires former Big 12 Executive Associate Commissioner Ed Stewart. He will be the Executive Senior Associate Athletic Director for Football Administration.
That's like the word equivalent of that unanimous Texas District 95A D1 first team selection. Yeah.
1,000%. He's basically going to be the new Brandon Sosna, who left for the Detroit Lions. Dennis Dodd from CBS tweeted, Ed Stewart is one of the most respected administrative football minds in the game. When current Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby announced his retirement, his name was one of the first one I thought of. Best of luck on the West Coast to Ed. Pete Thamel tweeted, a source noted, he brings a lot of experience with conference realignment, and which is a huge piece. His ability to be a leader in transition over the next couple of years will be critical. Never heard of this dude before, you know, all this breaks, but if Pete Thamel and Dennis Dodd are singing your praises, I think that's a good sign.
Absolutely, yeah. Whenever the national guys are out there saying this is a good hire, it's probably a good hire. For me, it's just the fact that USC is hiring a executive senior associate athletic director for football administration,
yeah,
which essentially means they're hiring like a football GM. That is good. That is good when you are acknowledging that football deserves its own specific AD figure that is focusing completely on the football program and all of the wants and needs of the football program. Absolutely here for it. Another sign that the athletic department has its stuff together more and more and more. So yay to this.
100%. We'll see everything that comes of it, but another in the line of those Ryan Abraham singles that he would always talk about Mike Bone getting singles. Brandon Sosna was, you know, basically like a 3-run bomb.
Yes.
You want to hope that Ed Stewart can be one of those too, but if nothing else, it's another single and a move in his favor to get someone who is experienced and not just, you know, a former football guy. This isn't hiring a guy off the Pete Carroll team to run, part of the administration. That's not what USC does right now, and that's certainly a good thing. Looking back at the Pete Carroll era, though, things were good for USC wide receivers, and things are good for USC wide receivers now, to the point that ESPN did its annual university declarations.
Position U calculations, whatever.
Yeah. And USC, of course, is wide receiver U. The Trojans were number 2 in quarterback U, number 5 in linebacker U, and not in the top 5 at running back U, even though Oregon is the top school in the Pac-12 there. The tailback U at USC, you know, was decades ago at this point. Don't think that's a surprise. SC is historically tailback U, but in actuality, this century, not really the case. But wide receiver U, yeah, absolutely. SC is going to be in the mix there.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about adding Drake London from a very bad USC team, and he's Drake London level, and then you talk about what Michael Pittman and Amon-Ra St. Brown were able to do at USC, and then also the reputation that both of them are gaining in the NFL this year and previous years. Juju Smith-Schuster, Nelson Agholor has been in the league. Like, it's just USC is producing NFL quality receivers, like even more so than during the Pete Carroll era when USC had really, really good receivers, but they were sort of getting a reputation for receiver busts in the NFL to a point. And that has certainly not been the case. The guys who have come into the league recently are all hitting it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, these rankings that ESPN puts out is really about producing the guys into the league. It's not about producing, you know, all pros and pro bowlers and all that stuff, which is why SC ranks so high in terms of quarterbacks, because all the quarterbacks have gotten to the NFL. They've all really been drafted, you know. They've gotten there for the most part in the last two decades. And that surely has been the case with the wide receivers. I think that Alabama's probably a school that you look in the last decade and say that they've probably produced, certainly in the last 5 years, have probably produced the best high-end receivers when you talk about first-round guys. And SC has had, what, two first-round wide receivers in the last decade in Nelson Agholor and Drake London.
Yeah.
Well, but there's been a slew of, you know, second rounders. I mean, even going back to Kerry Colbert was a second rounder. Steve Smith was a second rounder. Robert Woods was a second rounder. Juju, Marquise Lee, all those guys, Pittman, all second rounders. And it's just been a steady stream of all of them. And when you're SC and you can recruit those dudes and they help in the passing game. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at the receiving core that SC had, 2 years ago? Pittman, Amon-Ra, Drake London. Those were your three starters.
Tyler Vons.
And then there was a Tyler Vons on top of, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it was insane. And that's just what you want to keep going under Lincoln Riley as well.
It's wild when you look at other schools and, like, their wide receiver their wide receiver rankings or their, like, production. Like, I just remember looking at Ohio State's, like, I think Chris Olave was, like, the career leader or whatever, and his numbers pale in comparison to anybody in the top 10 at USC.
Yeah.
And you think that, like, Tyler Vons at most other programs would be, like, the greatest wide receiver in the history of their school. And, like, Tyler Vons was, like, the fourth best wide receiver on the field for USC that year. Like,
you know what the problem with Tyler Vons is? He went to SC where, like, yeah, to be considered an all-timer, you've got to sort of be an all-timer. And, like, because, yeah, his career was great. Yes. It was just in the pantheon of what great means at USC. That's certainly a different thing. But, like, that is by no means Tyler Vons' fault, right?
You know what I mean? Tremendous wide receiver.
Yeah. And so I always thought it was weird growing up looking at the stat book and how crazy it was that all the records in the receiving game, they're all new. They're all of them. Like, you look at Lynn Swann's numbers, and, you know, if you look on any list of all-time USC receivers, some people put him as high as, like, top three, right? I have a hard time doing that because he was playing, you know, at SC in an era in which it was completely different for what a wide receiver is. Like, one, I think he had 73 career catches.
Lynn Swann and Drake London
had that in, like, six games last year.
When you can have the Keyshawn Johnson, Mike Williams debate while also having the Drake London, Michael Pittman debate, while also having the Marquise Lee versus Robert Woods debate, while also having the Steve Smith and Dwayne Jarrett debate. Like, it is absolutely insane. USC has a 3D of all-time wide receivers that would be better than most of the starting lineups of wide receivers that schools out there could put together. It is truly insane.
Just get into it. Who's your starting five?
Well, starting five, or am I starting three?
Okay,
we're going five wide. Can I go five wide?
Okay, let's say four wide.
Let's go four wide.
But just go five and include a tight end. So four receivers and a tight end.
Sir. Okay.
Right off the dome. Don't overthink it.
Okay, I'm going Keyshawn, Mike Williams, Marquise Lee. Oh, shoot. Drake London. Oh, my gosh.
London's in the mix. Okay.
And... I mean, no. Hold on. I'm cheating. bear with me. I'm going to go Mike Williams, Keyshawn Johnson, Marquise Lee. my God. I'm going to have to leave someone out and it's killing me. Okay, Robert Woods, and then Drake London is my tight end.
Okay.
I
respect it.
Pain. Because I'm leaving out Michael Pittman. I'm leaving out Steve Smith. I'm leaving out Juju Smith-Schuster, who is up there with one of my favorite all-time players that I've ever seen seen play at USC. I'm leaving out Nelson Agholor.
There's a million dudes, yeah.
Yeah.
You want to know my five? Again, including a tight end. So this would be a little funky, but let me know about this.
You would turn Mike Williams into your tight end. I've seen you play Madden.
Well, if I was playing Madden, I would, of course, yeah. I go Mike Williams, Marquise Lee, Robert Woods, Adoree Jackson, and let's go with the tight end is Fred Davis. Actually, take out Marquise and put in Keyshawn.
You're taking out Marquise?
Yeah, let me explain. You take out Marquise because I think that Adoree can do the same thing as Marquise. And I kind of like bringing in Adoree because he's different.
See,
like,
we're
talking about a cohesive unit. You have Mike Williams and Keyshawn Johnson. And then you have Woods is like your receiving stalwart. Adoree is going to be your scat guy who can pretty much go anywhere. He can be inside. He can be a slot
dude.
He can run around on reverses and everything. He can sort of do that kind of thing. And then you have Fred Davis as your all-reliable.
Can we talk about how USC, you could make an argument for one of USC's best receivers in history was a cornerback?
Hey, I will make argument that one of USC's best receivers was a fullback because
Stanley Havili, man. If you give me a fullback, if you line up.
YouTube thinks that that I'm crazy for picking Adoree over Marquise.
I agree. And also that we're I think Marquise. We are cheating. Marquise Lee. There is no universe where a starting four or five at USC doesn't include Marquise Lee. I'm also to say that there isn't a universe where it doesn't include Drake London. So, like, find a way to fit him in there. As far as I'm concerned, but it's just like insane because it's a new type of air raid where the goal is just to have as many passing yards as you can possibly have in a season. Like, just set every record for passing yards in a season. Go do it.
Mm-hmm.
My fullback running back. Well, I would have Reggie Bush on the field with Stanley Havili.
Okay.
Havili would eat.
You want to know who my second running back would be behind Reggie in that sense? Buck Allen.
Allen
was a great receiving option as a receiver. Loved him coming out of the backfield. And because there was that stretch where he had like 100 all purpose yards for like
every game. Yeah.
It was like 20 something straight games. And it was because he was so good catching the ball out of the backfield. He was great on the slipstream. Yeah. So good at that. And yeah, you add him into you have him on in sort of an air raid offense. He would have been great. Just like, I don't know what Reggie Bush would be today. I don't know. Like, I can't. Would he
be in this all passing offense? Would he be considered a running back? In this all passing offense, he'd be a running back in the backfield, but he'd just go out to receive.
Yeah, like he'd be like 50-50 in terms of how he's getting touched for sure. Yeah. We got a comment from Tim who says,
I can't wait.
Lee Williams, Woods, and Johnson, and Fred Davis at tight end. Yeah, I think that right there is the chalk pick. I think that's right.
You know what's going to be really fun next summer when NCAA football comes out and, like, hold us to this, guys, but, like, we're going to be able to challenge ourselves to do this kind of bull crap that's like, play a season with where you never rush the football. Hey, you only throw passes.
Now. We can
do this stuff. It's going to be fun.
We can play on the old YouTubes.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. This is the Fall Camp Begins episode.
Yeah.
We're 40 minutes into it. We have not talked about Fall Camp.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Fall Camp. We will not be at Fall Camp this year, but I don't think that we're necessarily missing anything because everybody's missing everything. The way that the meteor availability goes this year, the first half hour, basically, the media is allowed to see. You're allowed to see stretching and individual one-on-one drills, but no team activities. So once they get into actually running plays, the media's got to go and come back at the end of practice for whatever player and coach availability is on the docket for that day. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how we sort of gauge what fall camp is going to be like in a condition where practice is essentially mostly closed. And this is why I thought it was so interesting that that everyone, you know, kind of hated when Clay Helton would do things like, well, literally anything, but mm-hmm. when he would change practice habits, like, you know, closing it off to the media or whatever, SC having open practice was the outlier. SC was the weird one nationally for having such open access practices. I think we all agree that we want open practices because it's so nice to be able to see those things and to report and to be able to talk to fans and get fans drummed up for what the season's going to be like. But what Oklahoma was doing is more in line with what everyone else has been doing, and Lincoln Riley definitely tightening things up that way.
Well, actually, they're way more open than anyone expected this year.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Just the fact that practices are going to be open for the warm-ups.
For the 30 minutes, yeah.
Is a surprise to everybody. So kudos to Mike Bone for keeping his promises to the media when he said he would try to work with...
1,000%.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, again, it's going to be the kind of thing that you're not going to actually see a ton from... people who are at media aren't going to see the kinds of access that, you know, we used to have, where we used to get to watch them in full 11-on-11s.
Yeah. How do you figure out the depth chart kind of thing? I think it's going to be interesting. So we got some nuggets here based on media reports, and Relique Brown is one of the big ones sort of turning heads early on. Again, this is from like one-on-one drills, but he is sort of someone who I think people have their eyes on, and so far, so good on things that are really Brown. Physicality, of course, a big buzzword. And Lincoln Riley says the number one thing that we're grading and evaluating you on right now is your fight. That was his message about players. Your thoughts so far?
Yeah, so I mean, so far what we've gotten to see is just the videos that USC is putting out. And, you know, people are getting hyped up about them because they're showing, you know, what looks like physicality. They're in pads and they're talking about it for sure. It sounds like things are at a level that is a high intensity level. So try not to read too much into that kind of thing, because the videos from camps are always sort of try to help you up, and you can't really tell for sure. We'll see what...
What are you trying to suggest? Are you saying it's propaganda? Because
it's propaganda.
Dylan Baxter was not propaganda. That was real. Those clips were real, and he was going to win the Heisman. With that one play in that one camp. Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Josh Fallow just won the Mackey Award with his one-handed catch that USC was showing off on Twitter.
It can happen, baby. Like,
I'm just glad to see him practicing. Like, I went to practice for 4 or 5 years, and I can count on one hand the number of practices I saw him at. So yeah, it's exciting that that he's out there making plays. Like, I think that's great. So camp is starting. I love the buzz that we're hearing about Relique Brown. It's exciting. They're talking about using him like a Swiss Army knife, which I quite enjoy. I'm still not sure where he's gonna fit in an offense that has so many other weapons. So it will be very fun to see once the sort of live, and in the words of Clay Helton, once the live bullets start flying, what they're actually going to use.
Once the players drive it like they stole it?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, this is a big opportunity for guys who maybe had not been able to break through or are new to the scene, because it's a new coaching staff. Everything is a fresh start. And, you know, when you watch a video and you hear Lincoln Riley say, like, the number one thing we're grading and evaluating you on is your fight. Like, if that's true, which, you know, one can only hope, then maybe we'll get more fight out of players, and we'll get more from players who know that they have to impress the new coaches, and maybe we'll finally get to see Josh Fallo live up to the high expectations that he came in with, and he's dealt with countless injuries. So maybe this is his opportunity. We've seen other guys in their final year finally get their moment. So he's one of those guys that could get it. Brandon Peely could get it. There's a lot of guys that just, I'm just excited to see what they can bring.
Yeah, 100%. I think this is going to be a fascinating month, just hearing things. But also with the anticipation of September 3rd. 4 weeks away now. I have no idea what to expect out of USC in week one. And that's sort of exciting. Like, I think of the last few seasons, and really the last two seasons, just the lack of buzz. I remember going into the last 2 years. I remember the day before the first game last year.
It was just...
And I messaged to somebody. I'm like, it doesn't even feel like the season started. Like, it used to be that once it gets to, like, as a kid growing up, like, once it gets to, you know, July, you start to get antsy, you get the season tickets in the mail, and it's like, ooh, here we go. And then you're just counting down the days, and the night before, you just can't sleep, and it's like Christmas, you know, the next morning. And that was just completely gone the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And now it's like there's a lot of anticipation for the season coming up. Really quick fall camp question for you before we get to the mailbag and start taking questions from our beautiful listeners. What are you most looking forward to hearing hype about this fall camp? One thing you can think about.
I want to hear some hype around the linebackers. Like, I want people
a reason to buy in.
Yeah, I want people to talk about, oh yeah, Shane Lee's the real deal. I want people to talk about Gentry, that like he's the real deal, or that Raylan Goforth's really coming along this year, or that, you know, at Corey Foreman on the outside at edge, any of those sort of guys in that bracket of very important positions that have just flat out underperformed over the last few years. Mm-hmm. I just want somebody to get me really excited about those positions in particular.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think you want to see anything at the linebacker position. I think defense in general, I want to see something because I'm so fascinated to see what happened. I'm pretty confident that SC's offense is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
It's the defense that is a huge question. Luckily for them, the bar is so low. They just need to show up and have a pulse, and I think they'll be better than last year. So. Yeah. That'll be a good starting place, but you want to see something, right?
Yeah, and I've seen some talk from it's the same old talk from defensive coordinators, from defensive coaches and stuff. But like the stuff that they're saying, I like what they're saying. That the stuff, like, they don't want to just get stops; they need turnovers, and that they're really going to make that emphasis. And just like intensity being a big thing. All of these are words, so
I mean, they've never worked harder.
They've never worked harder to get turnovers.
Yeah, the strength and conditioning coach.
these workouts are really kicking butt. You know,
yeah, they're really building the culture. Yeah.
But I will say one of the things that came out from the media day that USC held, one of the things that I highlighted that I really liked from Brett Nealon, was that he talked about like how the culture has changed since Lincoln Riley came. And that, you know, early in spring, every session they were getting together, they were having to do like 100, 200 push-ups or sit-ups or whatever because of punishment for guys being late to practice. And like he's saying now this fall, like, we maybe have to do 5 because there's one straggler. So like, that's the kind of thing that I'm getting excited about. And I want to continue to hear those kinds of things, as much proof positive as possible. That things are changing.
Think about all the tone they get from those push-ups, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, they're going to be so much less conditioned.
Because they're not doing, punishment reps.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's turn it over to you guys and open up the old mailbag. We got a question that was sent to us before the show from Josh in Buckeye Country. Do you think we'll see more of a mature Caleb Wilson, Caleb Williams, one of these names, I'll get the names right. Caleb Williams under center, or does he get wrapped up by being under the LA lights? At times he looked like a freshman. It was just very fast to take off under pressure by defenses last year. I'm going to be really intrigued by this because this has been a talking point that has plagued USC, which is the lack of development from quarterbacks because they add on responsibilities. I noticed that the first time with Matt Barkley. Matt Barkley's senior year was not good compared to his junior year. His senior year, he threw double the interceptions. His completion percentage was down. Like, all those things took a step back because he had more responsibility. He was expected to do even more, and that sort of backfired. And the same thing happened for Cody Kessler, for Sam Darnold, for Keaton Slovis. All those guys in the last decade, they got more responsibility as they got older. Sam Darnold in particular was told to stay in the pocket in 2017. And what happened was he started throwing more interceptions than having fumbles. Like, he was still turning the ball over just as much as he was the year before, but even more so because he's throwing the ball now. Throwing the ball, making worse decisions with it with his arm. So I'm always reluctant to see what those things are like if you're going to, you know, drill into your quarterback to stay in the pocket and not run so quickly. But I will trust a Lincoln Riley in delivering that message way more than the quarterback coaches that SC has had over the past decade.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that people do have to remember is that Caleb Williams, very exciting, but still a young quarterback. He didn't even have a full season of starting experience at Oklahoma. He got some very valuable experience, but it wasn't a full, you know, 12 games that he was starting and playing in. So, you know, he's still going to be learning.
Mm-hmm.
There was talk that he maybe needed to sharpen up his decision making, particularly on zone reads and just reading a defense. And those are the things that come with time. And like, this is why a second year or, you know, third year quarterback, you want them to get better until they're a senior, because 4 years is a long time to learn the process of reading a defense and all that kind of stuff. So I think just be patient with Caleb Williams. We know he has a ton of talent. It's going to be really fun to watch him. He's going to make some mistakes. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you just want to see him continue to get better and better. And what the one thing we know is that Lincoln Riley has produced too many good quarterbacks for it. Yes. Not to be something that you can expect to see from Caleb Williams, whether or not he's going to make that really big leap this year or maybe next year is really where my question would come in.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley has not produced a bad quarterback since he became the OC at Oklahoma. So,
yeah.
From
walk-ons to five-star studs, like every single one that he's picked to be his starter has been exceptional. So
yeah, so you should be able to feel confident in that. Let's go through the questions that we've got here on YouTube. Of course, you can always interact with us here on YouTube by putting a question in the chat and leading off with question in your question, so that way we can see it in all caps. Also, by the way, if you're joining us here on YouTube, please give the live stream a like. It helps us grow the show, and recommend the show to all of your friends. Subscribe and all of that. You guys are awesome. We couldn't do this without you, and we forever appreciate you. Josh says, who earns the player of the game award against Rice?
I think the easy answer is Caleb Williams. I think my most excited answer would be if, I don't know, if somebody like Tuli Tupelotu won it. Like, I think that would be really fun. But it's
a counterpoint. If you need a defensive player to be your best player against Rice, like I
99%.
I know what you're saying, but unless he has like 8 sacks or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So like, maybe that happens. Maybe someone has 4 interceptions and that's fun. But no, it's like 99% is going to be Caleb Williams, and if not Caleb Williams, then Jordan Addison or a receiver. Like, if it's not the quarterback or a receiver, I genuinely will be slightly surprised.
I tend to think it'll be Williams. So I think they'll throw the ball around and try to.
Because if a receiver goes off, then Williams' numbers are going to be out of this world. So, yeah.
That too. Poncho Cam says, do you think SC has a 45-point-per-game offense? Yeah, I think they have that capability, certainly. There's so much potency at the skill positions. They return an offensive line that is predominantly experienced. You have probably the best offensive lineman in the conference. In Andrew Voorhees, it's either him or Jackson Kirkland at Washington, right? Like, flip a coin. I think that is a great sign. And you got the Blitnikoff Award winner. You got the Pac-12's current all-purpose yardage leader in Travis Dye. Like, I think there's a lot of reason to think that they could be. I would expect a 35-point offense to start, because you got to start somewhere. SC has been hovering around the, you know, 30-point offense. Get to 35, then get to 40, then get to 45. Ideally, you want to be at 45, but you got to start somewhere first.
Yeah, Oklahoma averaged 39.1 last year. If USC is close to that, I'll be very happy.
100%.
Anything above 35, I'll be pretty okay. If it gets to 40, then that will mean
anything over 40,
something wonderful happened.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Oklahoma didn't have a Jordan Addison. They didn't have the wide receiver core that Caleb Williams now has.
I mean, they were pretty good, though.
They were pretty good, but like, they didn't have Oklahoma has had good receivers. I don't know that they've had like superstar receivers the way that USC can put superstar receivers on the field.
Right.
So like, maybe that's the difference for Caleb Williams. Dye should be really helpful in the running game too, to keep things balanced. So I think there is a chance that USC hits 40. I don't know that I would bet on it, just because there's going to be a game or two where they just, everything goes wrong. It's going to happen. Like, you have to sort of prepare for that, just given how new everything is for this program. So 45 is probably asking a little bit too much. I wouldn't rule it out, but I just think it's probably a little bit too much.
I would say pray for 38.
Yeah.
Hope for 42.
Yes.
That work? Kings fan says, which game would be the most palatable loss? I think it's got to be at Utah, right?
At Utah, if you kept it close, or is it Notre Dame? It might just be Notre Dame.
And, well, it's one of the two. I think it's definitely those two would be the ones that would hit there. I think there's a world in which it could be Oregon State, but we need to see Oregon State take another step forward first.
Losing to a top 10 Utah team in Salt Lake City, if you didn't get the crap beat out of you,
yeah, I don't think there's any anger in your face.
Especially because of the Pac-12 South record, like, it's
no more divisions.
It's not a division thing anymore. So losing to Utah means less than it would in the past. So, I don't know that I would get bad. Obviously, palatable losses are close losses. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Kingston also says, if Sosna was a three-run bomb, what was Lincoln Riley? He was back-to-back Grand Slams in that comparison.
Yeah.
Well, down seven, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rama Murdy says, what are the most interesting things to watch in fall camp? I think it's got to be the development of the defense, right?
I think so. Maybe it's the running back pecking order, because I think you sort of look at it and say Travis Dye will be the guy, but you know, I'm not sure what it's going to look like behind. Relique Brown being part of that whole equation also will be very interesting to watch. So on defense, certainly the linebackers. On offense, I'd say the running backs, and just what that unit looks like, what the pecking order starts to look like going forward.
Yeah. Hokey P says, what are you most excited to see in fall camp? I think we talked about that. It's buzz in general, but especially anything on defense, I think.
Any defensive buzz, but anything that makes me excited for the season to start, like anything that gets me going, I think is going to be the thing that excites me most. All of it.
100%. Scott says, over under attendance for the Rice game. First of all, I don't want to put an exact number on that, because that should be an over under for week one when we do our preview episode. So I'll hold back.
Do we have a time?
Then again, no one's going to remember at this point.
No. I won't even remember.
I think it's 3 p.m. I think it's 3 p.m. Week one. My assumption for week one.
3 p.m. in 66,000. That is that potentially going to be another San Jose State
69,000 men. Like 60, it's going to be pushing 70, but it won't be 70.
It's not, yeah, I think it'll be lower than people expect, and it'll be way more about rice than anything. Rice at 3 p.m. in September when the forecast
Wants, who
is
wants some afternoon rice?
I mean, it's probably going to be pushing 100 degrees at this rate. Like, I just, yeah.
More of a bean guy in the afternoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're really trying to pigeonhole that one in, Michael.
let me have it, please. Kings fan says, question for Alicia. Has Michael's food takes gotten any better? There's nothing wrong with my food takes. So I can't imagine that. The answer would be yes. Well, it shouldn't be no either, because there's nothing wrong with my food takes, right? Right. There's nothing wrong with my food takes. So tonight for dinner, we're having tortellini.
We are having tortellini.
Which I should share what my tortellini take is. I've put this on Twitter before.
Yeah.
In case you don't read all of my tweets religiously, like you should. My tweet about my thought about tortellini is that tortellini, my friends, should be a finger food.
See, I disagree.
And thank me later. No, it is an amazing finger food.
So, okay. I'm not going to disagree that, like, you couldn't just, like, eat a tortellini. Like, but, like, why? It doesn't need to be a finger food. Like,
why not?
On a fork is going to be the best way to eat that.
Why?
Because then it's not gonna. It's gonna have to be cooled down enough that you don't get, you know, burned fingers or something.
I think they're fine at room temperature, and then you just dip it in. You can dip it in a little thing of marinara. Hell yeah!
I mean, it's A+. Not. It's. I think it's better warm.
I mean, sure, but like, what I'm saying is, I don't think it needs to be. I think it's edible, even if it's not piping hot. So, I will eat it cold. I don't care. It's a great finger food.
I agree with you. The idea that like tortellini doesn't need to have sauce on it. When I make this tortellini, it's right like now, the it's only pasta
that you can have without sauce.
I like a lot of pasta. It's just buttered, to be honest.
What are you, six?
Yes.
Jeez.
Apparently.
Hokey P says fried tortellini. I could see regular tortellini as a finger food. I'm not so sure. Try it, my friend. Try it. Josh says, do you think we will see any two back sets? Yeah, probably. I mean, I haven't watched enough OU games off the top of my head, you know, studying them, but I would imagine there would be two back sets. I think there's a lot of split backs where they might have an H back in the backfield too.
Especially if they decide they want to find a way to get Relique Brown on the field. I could see that being a possibility for sure.
Yeah. Our friend Dave in Orange County says, is the lack of a punting game going to hurt us at some point this season? SC, if you didn't know, we should probably should have talked about it. Punter Atticus Bertram's from Australia. He was trying to get into school and they said, no. Well, I don't know who said no, but either way, he's not here for some reason. Yeah. Don't know the reason, but he's not here. So
it SC sounds,
doesn't have a punter.
It sounds like Lincoln Riley is okay with going forward with the walk-on punter that was there for spring camp, but that they're going to try and find like a backup plan. So there could be somebody still incoming at this point. I guess not having a punter could always be a thing that comes back to bite USC. But at the same time, aren't we looking for this offense to not have to rely on a punter all that often?
Yeah, if there's a player in which you don't have a person on scholarship on the roster, it's the punter.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one where,
and I don't
where,
mind
like,
using a scholarship.
Now, I think having a good punting game is a great thing to have. Like, absolutely, he would be a great weapon to have if you had a, you know, great, like, rugby-style punter, 1,000%. I'm all on board for it. We've talked about it a lot in the past with your friend, What was your the guy that you declared the Ray Guy winner, that his name is just completely
Ben Griffiths. Yes. I was totally not on the same page.
We need to go back to find the soundboard, rig it up so you can. Oh my God, Ben Griffiths.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Last couple questions here. Josh says, whose team has the better season, Kiffin at Ole Miss or Sark at Texas? I think it's got to be Kiffin or Ole Miss at this point, because just based on last year, they were a really good team last year. Mind you, I think the SEC was down in the mid-tier last year, and that's why Ole Miss was so good and had a 10-win season. Was it their most wins in school history or whatever it was? So I think they might not be as good as they were last year, especially after they lost Matt Corral. They have a new quarterback, some guy. Have you ever heard of their new quarterback? Something Dart? Never heard of him. Sounds very familiar. He's going to be interested to see how he fits in. But yeah, I would definitely take Ole Miss there. Last question before we wrap this up. Tim says, should I be worried about offensive line depth? Please, please sell me on the depth.
Can't do it. You should be worried. I don't think you need to worry too much about the starting five. I think the starting five looks pretty decent. They did a decent job last year. They've added Bobby Haskins. Gotta feel good. Depth. Start lighting candles, start praying novellas, start invoking whatever higher power you need to that injuries don't hit that unit, because I can't give you any promises about what happens behind the starting five.
I think the offensive line last year, we went into that season with no expectations. And they were arguably the best unit on the team.
They were at least the least frustrating unit on the team.
I think we did a disservice to the offensive line last year, because we kept talking about how they were fine.
Yeah.
And I think that was because we were so clouded with preseason judgment of how bad they were going to be.
Yeah.
That I think that we didn't give them enough justice about how good they actually were last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, like we said every time, like, it wasn't USC's inability to score points in the red zone or anywhere. Yeah. It wasn't because of the offensive line.
The sacks at quarterback, I don't think they were necessarily because of the O-line either. There were a lot of coverage sacks.
In depth at some bad USC offensive lines that I've watched closely because I was doing rewatches. So, like, yeah, they weren't anywhere near that in terms of just bad assignments, physical beats, all that kind of stuff.
I will take it to my grave. SC hired Clay McGuire 3 years too late.
Probably, yes. Probably, yes. Whole new ball game. New offensive line coach again. New offense again. Like, it's we don't know what impact that's going to have on this offensive line. But at the very least, USC returns quite a veteran starting five.
Yeah,
with a lot of game experience, who have been through this before with new offensive line coaches. So I think there's reason for optimism. Hokie says, I think the starting line will actually be a huge strength for this team. Depth, however, is absolutely an issue. And I think that's really what it comes down to. One injury makes things very difficult.
You talk about experience, and, you know, Andrew Voorhees was recruited by John Robinson. So
yeah, that's what it feels like.
He's been here for a long time. But
yeah.
Anyways, that's going to wrap up this episode. As always, thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week, and we are working on something special for next week. What could that special thing be? I don't know. Think about it. And you could find out next week, Monday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific, here on the YouTube, and the same old time, same old channel over on any podcast catcher that you could find us. We'll be there after we record. We'll upload there as well. If you're listening to us here on YouTube, as always, hit the like button and the subscribe. And you're following us along with Apple Podcasts. Give us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Give us 5 stars. We'll be your friend forever. And if you're listening to us on Spotify or anywhere else, do what you gotta do. Subscribe. You know all those things. So thanks for everybody listening to us here live. Thanks to everybody in the chat. You guys are awesome. And we'll see you next week. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.